Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to watch and listen today. It's been over a fortnight since I last provided you with an update, and given the developments in the United Kingdom in recent days, it seems an appropriate time to speak to you all again. I'm sure it won't have escaped your notice that the situation in relation to COVID-19 in the United Kingdom is not developing as any of us would have hoped. On Monday, the UK government's chief medical adviser, Professor Chris Whitty, and the chief scientific officer, Sir Patrick Vallance, held a briefing. They set out a stark picture of the potential, and I must emphasise that word, potential, for an exponential growth of coronavirus cases in the United Kingdom in the coming weeks. This could see as many as 50,000 new cases a day by the middle of October, placing severe pressure on the country's health and social care services. By the middle of November, this could mean as many as 200 deaths from the COVID-19 each day in the United Kingdom. Later on Monday, the United Kingdom's coronavirus alert was raised from level 3 to 4, the second highest level. This reflected the fact that the transmission rates are high, potentially exponential. On Tuesday, the Prime Minister chaired a meeting of COBRA, the United Kingdom's Emergency Response Committee, following which he made a statement in Parliament setting out new measures designed to restrict the spread of the virus in England. On Tuesday evening, the Prime Minister once again addressed the nation, a clear signal of the seriousness with which the UK government is treating these signs of a second wave. Earlier today, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, set out a package of measures to Parliament designed to help UK workers and businesses, which includes extending the reduction in VAT on hospitality, accommodation and attractions from 20% to 5%, which had been due to expire on the 12th of January 2021. In accordance with the Customs and Excise Agreement with the United Kingdom, the Isle of Man will also extend the application of the 5% rate to hospitality and attractions until the 31st of March 2021. The reduced rate of VAT already applies to holiday accommodation here. The UK government also announced the provision of an option to pay the deferred VAT in smaller instalments during 2021 to 2022 without incurring interest. The Isle of Man will also introduce this payment scheme and more details will be made available in due course. The northwest of England, the region with which the Isle of Man has perhaps the closest connections, continues to be one of the worst areas affected by the virus's resurgence. Many of us have loved ones in the region and we have close ties through commerce and our transport links. In recent weeks, I've spoken with the mayors of Liverpool and Greater Manchester, as well as North West MPs, and have expressed our solidarity with the people of Northern England and, of course, the wider United Kingdom. Turning to the situation here in the Isle of Man, whilst we currently have two active cases of coronavirus, both of these have been detected in individuals who are already in self-isolation. There are no signs whatsoever that the virus is circulating in our community and the Isle of Man therefore remains free of coronavirus. I will now hand over to the Health and Social Care Minister, David Ashford, who can briefly go into a little more detail about the four active cases that we have had in the past few weeks. David.
Thank you, Chief Minister. As the Chief Minister has said, all four cases have been from people who were in isolation and have been isolating after travel through the UK. All four were asymptomatic and were picked up from the testing regimes that we have in place. None of the four have been out in the community, and contact tracing in all four cases has not identified any high-risk contacts at all. All of the cases, so are therefore what we would refer to as textbook cases, and our policy and procedures have worked as expected. Therefore, none of the cases are a cause for concern for us, but it does once again emphasise the importance of self-isolation after travel and the reason that we have those policies and procedures in place and why they are so important when it comes to protecting our community. Thank you, Chief Minister.
And thank you very much, David. Now, that's a clear sign that these processes and procedures that we have put in place are working and are robust, serving to protect our island and its people. And I commend everyone who has complied with the self-isolation requirements when arriving in our island. This is the most important protective barrier we have to keep the virus at bay. If you leave the island and return, I cannot emphasise enough how important it is that you follow the instructions you are given, instructions you are legally obliged to adhere to. As we have seen in the news, the consequences for not following the rules can be severe. Turning now to borders, we remain on level 4 of our borders framework, which means that residents are free to travel off island but must self-isolate upon their return. This is either 14 days or for 7 days, followed by a test, and if that test result is negative for COVID-19, then those self-isolation restrictions are relaxed but remain in force for a further 7 days. Our borders framework was designed to help us eliminate the virus locally, which we achieved together. The framework was also designed to allow us to transition gradually through varying levels of restrictions in order to protect the island by carefully managing the risk of the virus returning to our community. We have said that throughout this pandemic that in order to be effective in protecting our island, our borders policy must reflect and respond to the situation in the United Kingdom. Now, given the resurgence of the virus and the potential for this to build into a fully fledged second wave, we have to be realistic about the threat to our island. I know the border situation has been tough for many of you in terms of being able to reunite here on the island with close family and loved ones who live away. The Council of Ministers is also conscious that people's thoughts are now turning towards the festive season when bringing family and kin together is so important. All of us had been hoping that the promising signs in the United Kingdom earlier in the summer, where the virus was contained and in retreat, might be sustainable and sustained, and that this could enable a move from level 4 to level 3 of our borders framework. As I've set out earlier, however, the situation in the United Kingdom is sadly going in the wrong direction. For now, the Council of Ministers has decided that in the best interests of our island community, it is prudent to remain at level 4. Now, I appreciate that for some, not moving to level 3 will be a disappointment, while for others, remaining at level 4 will be reassuring. This reflects my inbox and the comments I receive from you. There are those who want us to remain where we are. There are those who want restrictions to be relaxed further. And there are those that want us to return to level 5 of our borders framework. On the topic of level 5, as we touched upon earlier, the processes and precautions we have in place are working. Our 14-day self-isolation policy and the restrictions in place for key workers have kept the virus out of our community. And our new 7-day testing programme is picking up positive cases of the virus and allowing us to direct those individuals to self-isolate for a further 14 days. A return to level 5 would remove the ability of people to freely leave the island and to return subject to a period of self-isolation. We must be mindful of the practical, emotional and mental health consequences that a move back to level 5 would entail. And we must also bear in mind that even at level 5, essential workers, so vital to keeping our essential services and critical national infrastructure functioning, remain able to come to the island. Such workers made up 2 of the 4 positive tests we have had in recent weeks. Again, the safeguards we have in place detected the virus and we were effective in preventing its spread. All of these considerations serve as a reminder of the difficult balancing act the Council of Ministers must perform in taking decisions that keep our island safe, whilst taking into account the potential economic and social impact of those decisions. The Council of Ministers does recognise, however, that we have been at level 4 for a prolonged period, and so we have set to work on exploring what other avenues may be available to help those who are unable or who are finding it difficult to travel to the United Kingdom and Ireland to see close family. We want to do all we can to help you see your loved ones. It has become clear that a sticking point in moving from level 4 to 3 is the potential risk involved. It is perhaps that, in the current climate, moving from level 3 to level 4 feels more like a leap rather than a step. We think so. And so the Council of Ministers is actively considering breaking level 3 into two parts. Level 3A would allow residents to sponsor immediate family members, that is, mums, dads, grandparents, grandchildren, brothers, sisters, husbands, wives and partners, to come to the island. Visiting family members would, of course, be required to follow a mandatory period of self-isolation. Level 3B would be about sponsorship, more generally, in addition to family, and would cover business and friends, for example. This potential for a revised approach to Level 3 would give the Council of Ministers more room to manoeuvre in judging when the time is right to take the next step. That time is not today. For the reasons I have set out around the situation in the United Kingdom, and because we have more work to do in fleshing out this potential change to our borders framework to ensure it is right and that the safeguards we need are in place. As I've said earlier, I hope that this news brings reassurance. Reassurance to those wanting their loved ones to come to the island, and reassurance to those who do not wish to see too sudden a change in who can come to our island. These decisions are never easy, and there are many factors to consider. The Council of Ministers acts in what we believe are the best interests of our island and you, its people. Before taking questions from the media, I spoke earlier about thoughts turning to the festive season. One particular aspect of this is our students returning from university, and I would like to invite the Minister for Education, Sport and Culture, Alex Allinson, to say a little bit more on this. Alex.
Thank you, Chief Minister. The new school year has now begun, with some pupils starting school for the first time. Some have transitioned to one of our excellent secondary schools, and some students have moved up to sixth form or college. Talking to teachers this week, all of them have told me how important those 5 weeks at the end of term were to get our students' young education back on track and to allow them to catch up where they had lagged behind. Due to the efforts of you in stopping the spread of COVID-19, schools were able to lay on proms and give those sixth formers who had worked so hard to study for exams which never took place a decent farewell and celebration of their achievements. This week, teachers have been working with officers from the department to draw up comprehensive contingency plans to deal with all eventualities. I would like to thank them for their help and support devising strategies that meet the needs of our people and our island. But some students going to university across for the first time or returning to continue their studies have already started to leave. As a department, we've been in contact with universities across. Each have found their own way to maintain educational opportunities and used new ways of learning whilst keeping students safe. You don't have to be a parent to imagine the challenges students face leaving our island and to live in the United Kingdom or Ireland. But they are resilient and will adapt to a very different way depending on where they are in the country. The health situation in the UK is changing rapidly, and there are concerns about lockdowns and restrictions on gatherings and movement. As a department and as a government, we will do everything possible to guarantee the safety of our students abroad. The Chief Minister has already detailed further proposed changes to our border policy, a border policy that has helped keep us safer on the island, but has inevitably restricted us from freely visiting friends and family across or inviting us here to join us. I would like to reassure students that we never intend to have to close our borders completely again as we did in March. If students have to return early, we will help them get home. If movement is restricted in the United Kingdom, we will work with governments across to enable our students to be repatriated. We are in a much better place than in March. Investment in on-island testing and a comprehensive track and trace system means we can manage the return of our residents whilst minimising the risks to the wider community of them unwittingly bringing the virus back. But to prepare for all eventualities, I would like to remind students and their families to register now to travel back in the future. Please go on the gov.im website to obtain the certification you need to apply for a landing card when you need to return. I and all the staff at the department, teachers and all those key individuals who maintain our schools, nurseries and colleges are committed to the safety of our pupils. We will ensure that the education of our young people is maintained, but that their safety and the safety of all our staff is our main priority. Turning on the TV news can be depressing and anxiety can be contagious, but by working together we can ensure that our students and their families are kept safe and that our island life will prevail. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alex. And now to questions from our media. And first this afternoon we have Rob Pritchard from 3FM. Good afternoon, Rob. Pastor Mai.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. First of all, touching on what you mentioned about the festive season and the potential difficulties surrounding that, depending on the situation. If there are, for example, Manx-born people over in the UK who are no longer classed as residents, what specific ways could they be able to return to the island? For example, if they are living alone, whether at university or in work?
Well, obviously, the Minister's clearly stated that our university students will be allowed to come back. We will put in place procedures to allow that to happen. Now, I would hope that by then we've moved to level 3A and that the United Kingdom infection rates are under control, and it's a lot safer for us to do that. I cannot give a guarantee that people who have family on the island but who no longer live on the Isle of Man will be able to get back to the island. We will have to review that near the time, but there is a commitment that if, as long as it's safe, we will put measures in place to enable that to happen.
Thank you very much. My second question, it was mentioned a couple of times in the UK very recently that because of the situation they have, their measures may have to be in place for up to the next 6 months. If that is going to be the case, what effect could that have on the likes of the TT and major events here next year?
Well, obviously, the TT is not till 3 months after their opening up or their six-month period being over. We will have to monitor it. Now, we hope that in the new year, maybe by March time, there will be a vaccine, and that could be a game changer. Equally, there could be a test out there that actually tells you from the day you have the test that you've got COVID or not. At the moment, the test we do only tells you if you're effectively shedding the test, and you could have a false negative. So if a test comes out that will tell you you've got it, then we could potentially test everyone before they arrive on the island as to whether they have COVID or not. So let's not say no to the TT. I'm still optimistic that it will be able to go ahead, and but obviously nearer the time we will make that decision. But I think we've got another 3, 4, 5 months before we have to worry about that.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Rob. And I move on to Josh Stokes from ITV Granada. Good afternoon, Josh. Pastor Mai.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. So far, the self-isolation policy has proved to be effective, but I wonder if you can outline how greater the risk is when someone is isolating when there are other people in their household as opposed to isolating completely alone. Because given how contagious the virus is, I wonder if there's any concern there, any thoughts on whether the isolation advice is strict enough.
Well, obviously, we are reviewing the situation, and the Council of Ministers will be having a further workshop to see if there are ways of beefing up our procedures on the island. I'll bring the Health Minister in to expand on that in a minute, but I'd just like to give you some details of the tests that we've been doing on the antibody, the blood tests that we've been taking on people who have had COVID-19, myself included, and we found that this regarding people living with people who have had COVID-19, 86% caught COVID got it from not from their partner but from another source outside of the family home. I think 8% caught it from other activities, but only 6% caught it from being infected by the person living with them, and therefore, and in my own case, none of my family contact or caught COVID-19 from me. So if you follow the rules and procedures living with someone at home who has COVID-19, then there is a very low risk of catching COVID-19. But I'm sure the Health Minister will give you a far more detailed answer.
Thank you, Chief Minister. The first thing we have to say, Josh, is we have to remind people what self-isolation in the home is. It doesn't mean you being sat on the couch with the rest of the family. You need to isolate away in a separate room. Any shared facilities such as bathrooms and kitchens should be cleaned down and treated separately, and they shouldn't be mixing within the household. But one of the things that we also have, as the Chief Minister touched on, we've got the evidence from our antibody studies that are also tying in now with other studies around the world, that in relation to close contacts, it's not much different in terms of its contagion amongst close contacts than it is out in the community. But also, we are now seeing scientific evidence that is suggesting that people who are asymptomatic with COVID-19 may not necessarily be as contagious. And one of the things that we actually have in place is obviously, if anyone in this household displays symptoms, then at that point, the entire household shuts down. So it's not the case if it carries on until they get a positive test. The moment anyone displays symptoms, they shut down the entire household at that point. Also, the other thing is that we've got to say that all the decisions are under constant review. At the moment, we have no community transmission, and it would not be, I think, appropriate to be locking down entire households at this time. We have certain households that would end up in permanent isolation because we have, for instance, cancer patients who travel up to every 7 days. So we've got to be aware that the decisions we make can have a huge impact. The Chief Minister referred to mental health earlier on, and shutting down whole households at this time could have a massive effect in that way. And it just isn't backed up with the current evidence of the virus on the island. But I do need to caveat it by saying all decisions are constantly reviewed, and if we need to make changes, then we will.
Thank you very much. And I just want to clarify, Josh, I did get my figures slightly wrong. 86% of people living with someone with COVID-19 did not get COVID-19. 8% then got it, but got it from another source. Only 6% caught it from living with that person who had COVID-19. So that's reduces the risk significantly if, as the Health Minister says, you follow the rules and isolate in your home rather than mixing with the rest of your family. Your next question, Josh.
Yeah, thanks for that clarification. My second question, I want to ask about level 3 in the border framework, in particular the difference between a Manx resident travelling back to the island from the UK and family and friends of Manx resident travelling to the island, which would still be allowed in level 3. The chances are family and friends in the UK will be exposed to the exact same as Manx residents that are travelling to the UK. If they then come to the island, they will be self-isolating for the same amount of time as that person and likely be in the same place as a Manx resident would be when they come back. So why does the risk increase when all of those people that travel back to the island are exposed to the virus in the same way, regardless of whether they're a Manx resident or not?
Well, I suppose you're just increasing the numbers of people that can come to the island, Josh. So if you split, level 4 was a straight, historically level 4 and then level 3 allowed people, not just family, but also friends to come, people wanting to visit the island to come. We felt that that was increasing the chances of bringing COVID-19 onto the island. And therefore, if we split it into two groups, obviously, I think it's more important that if you're unable to travel off the island to visit your loved ones, that if we allow them to come to the island, they have to follow a strict criteria. And we will be working that up, and we'll be having workshops in the Council of Ministers to come up with a criteria. That's the most important message I've had from people who want to see us move from level 3. It's that they are missing seeing their new grandchild, their child, their mum, their dad, their brother or their sister. That's the most important thing, to allow our families to come and see us on the island. We're not there yet, I hasten to add, but we're setting up the procedures to allow that to happen going forward once we see an improvement in the infection rate in the United Kingdom. Obviously not quite so important. The rest of level 3, which we're calling level 3B, are people, friends and business acquaintances who might want to come to the island. Now, you can technically come on business if you're a key worker and it's needed for your business and it's urgent, but on the whole, they're not allowed. And obviously, friends and business acquaintances, not quite as important to our people than seeing their loved ones. And that's why we've split it. So you're reducing the numbers of those people that can come to the island, and we will be, when we do go down that route, though it's not at this time, I hasten to add, we will be giving far more detail on how that will operate. Thanks
just
very
just
much.
Just to be clear, is that a case, it's just numbers at the moment, it's not necessarily further health risk, but just in the sense that there may be more people coming back?
Well, obviously, if you're living in the UK full-time, there's a greater risk of you bringing COVID-19 to the island rather than our people going away for a brief period and then coming back. So you need to be absolutely clear that you've got proper procedures in place to ensure that we do it as safely for the population on the Isle of Man as possible. But, you know, I have to accept, whilst I have very few family members in the United Kingdom, if I couldn't see my children or my mum and dad or my grandchildren, I would be stressed about that too. And we have to try and take into account the concerns of that level of group of our population, but equally we have to respect the risks that we don't want to import COVID-19 and have it in our community. So it's trying to get the balance right and be practical. We're never going to get it 100% right, but we follow the best medical advice. We discuss this with our medics on a regular basis and our public health, and we will be working up this policy. However, I have to stress it won't be happening now, as I'm afraid the position the UK find themselves in does not allow us to make any changes to our borders policy. Okay, thanks, Josh. We now move on to Alex Bell from BBC Isle of Man. Good afternoon, Alex. Fastamai.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chief Minister, for sending out basically the preamble to the question I was just going to ask you there. Because under level 4 border policy, it isn't just residents who can come back, is it? You can come to the Isle of Man if you're a key worker, if you have certain family permissions, if you're a student who ordinarily lives here and has been away for a term at university, if you've been employed here. To some who are left out of these groups, it just feels arbitrary and unfair, I think, at this point, for families, for citizens who can't come over. So what exactly is the reasoning behind not just opening the borders to people on an application basis and monitoring them when they come home to self-isolate, as we do with everyone else?
Well, I suppose it's risk, Alex, in a nutshell. If we allow an increased number of people who aren't ordinarily resident on the island to come, especially, we have to be blunt and say that the vast majority of our island connectivity is with the Northwest and Northern Ireland, which are now in code red in the United Kingdom. So there is such a greater risk of, sadly, those people bringing an infection to the island. We've tried to be as practical as possible. We don't want to destroy our economy, and therefore people wanting to relocate to the island to work or who have a key business skill that is needed on the Isle of Man, of course, we've had to allow to come to the island, and also, obviously, key workers such as doctors, nurses. Hopefully that's as logical as we can be. If the infection rate in the United Kingdom was significantly lower, then, of course, we would be moving on to level 3A. But we have to take all of this into consideration. And this is the, this is where we find ourselves, that sadly we can't move from border level 4 to border level 3A, but we are preparing so that when the day comes, we can move quickly. I don't know, David, if you want to expand on any of that.
Yes, thank you, Chief Minister. Basically, it's all around a risk approach. Everything we do carries a certain amount of risk. So just touching, Alex, for instance, you raised key workers. Key workers have certain restrictions around them. So a key worker has to be someone where there is a detriment if they don't do their job, or basically there is no one else available to do that job. So, for example, if I give an example from DHSC, the deliveries of oxygen that we have, but there is key restrictions around those workers on what their movement is, what tasks they can potentially undertake in their role. So there is limits. Even for people travelling into the island for compassionate grounds, they have to isolate. The numbers are limited because it is limited on what purposes people can come in. So even if they're attending a funeral and so on, and it's within the period, there is rules and regulations around that. Moving to stage 3 allows the numbers to increase. Now, logically, as the Chief Minister has already touched on, if you've got increased footfall and increased travel, then you increase that risk of there being a case of someone coming in with the virus and potentially being missed. So we just have to be very, very careful, particularly with the infection rate in our near neighbour, as the Chief Minister's mentioned, the northwest of England, around how we do it. So there is an increased risk if we move to a level 3. And at this time, we just don't believe that risk is justified.
But there's no limit on footfall anyway, is there? Because it's as many people as possible could leave the island tomorrow and all come back 6 weeks later under the current rules.
Well, hang on, Alex. We've got to take the difference between someone travelling and someone living in an infected region. The risk of someone getting contagion who is in that environment permanently is a lot higher than someone who may be visiting for a few days. So the risk factor between individuals does change depending upon their environment. So that is why, so there isn't a limit on residents going away and coming back, but in terms of people coming into the island at the moment under level four who are not residents, there is. And the people, and you've got to take into account the environment those people are living in, because that is the risk factor. Yeah.
Well, then again, okay, your next question, Alex. Alex, your next question.
OK, I was just wondering when we can expect any decision on level 3A, as it's been dubbed.
Well, it really is dependent on infection rates in the United Kingdom, so I can't give you an answer. We're keen not to say 3 weeks' time, 4 weeks' time, because we just don't know what the situation will be in the United Kingdom. They're not in a good place. They're doing their best to reduce their infection rate, and we'll just have to closely monitor their situation. And our medical experts are in regular daily contact with the United Kingdom. They advise us, give us their updates and their thoughts, and we'll monitor the situation. And as soon as we feel it's safe to go to what we're going to be calling our level 3A, then we will, of course, do that. But just at this moment in time, given the infection rate, I think yesterday was about 6,187 cases, we just don't feel it's the right time to expand the right to travel to the island.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Ewan Gorn from Manx Radio. Ewan, good afternoon. Pastor Mai,
Chief Minister. I was wondering, with all the changes to 3A and 3B and the Office of National Statistics in the UK having changed the formula it uses to calculate UK infection rates when we created the borders framework, is it time to make a new one so the public can clearly understand how decisions are being taken?
Well, I think we have a clear borders framework, but obviously it was felt that moving from level four to level three, given the problems the UK have experienced, and not just the United Kingdom, let's not forget that Europe is not in a good position too. If you look at France and Spain, they're considerably worse than the United Kingdom. They're maybe 3-4 weeks ahead of where the United Kingdom are. So we just felt that because we are keen that as soon as we can help Manx families to get their loved ones to come and visit them on the island, that would be the best way of speeding that up. Whereas if we had to include maybe people who weren't residents or weren't family members of Manx residents, then that would be a bigger risk and it might take longer for us to make that decision to move from 4 to 3. We'll be able to make a quicker decision from 4 to 3A than 4 to the old 3. So that's why we've come up with this decision to make a change. We will, of course, be publishing that on our website so people can follow it. And it's why we're discussing it today in the press conference. And nearer the time when we feel we can move, we will, of course, give far greater detail on how that will work.
Can you share what the infection rate would need to be before a move to level three and conversely a move back to level five?
Not at this moment in time. I mean, I'm happy to give out some data, but obviously you've got to look at a number of factors. A, it's the infection rate in the UK. B, it's the capacity in our hospitals, for example, where our hospitals are flat out at the moment doing elective surgery because we're trying to catch up and reduce our waiting list because of the period when we couldn't do any operations because we were just having the hospital on standby to deal with COVID-19. So that's a key factor, and also the number of cases on the island at the time. Health Minister, if you want to expand on that.
Yeah, there's a couple of points, Chief Minister, I'll pick up if I may. Firstly, Ewan, you mentioned about the ONS survey. You're quite correct. What they term their household survey, they have actually changed the basis for the calculation in relation to that. But what you've got to look at is all the different measures. One of the preferred measures I have is in relation to the percentage of positive tests coming back as a percentage of tests done overall. Now that is that takes into account when countries increase their testing regimes as well, because obviously if you're testing more, then you're more likely to identify cases. But whichever measure you use, including that measure, the UK is now going the wrong way. So it's not just a case of the ONS basis survey has changed and therefore that's pushed the infection rate higher. Whichever one of the measures you use, the UK is spiking. In relation to moving between the different stages, as the Chief Minister's rightly said, there is a number of factors in play there. While infection rate is a very important one, we also not just have to look at the national infection rate in relation to the UK, we also have to look at our near neighbours, because that's where most of our travel is from the northwest. So if we actually look, for instance, at the infection rate per 100,000, the northwest now is up. You've got Liverpool peaking at 170.1, you've got Wirral 131.8, you've got Sefton at 106. All of these regions up until a few weeks ago were around about just under the 70 mark, so it shows just how far the infection increase is going. So all of that has to play into our decision making as well.
Well, just bearing that in mind, how do you think that? Do you think that's clear to the public then? Do you think they can take in all that information and use that to make a judgment on whether the borders are going to change?
Well, at the moment, one of the things I've said all along about the borders framework is I don't think people should be making subjective judgments, because there is a lot of factors
so that
come in. So the borders framework is there to actually show to people what we take into account when we make the decisions. But there is a whole load of factors that are involved in that. So I've said all along, in fact, I think I did the press conference when we first announced the border framework with the Chief Minister, and I seem to remember actually laying out the fact that, you know, there were other factors as well that would affect our decisions. So that is specifically why within the borders framework there is no timelines. We have deliberately said that, but the point of the borders framework was to actually lay out the different stages so people could see that when we move to a stage, what it actually meant for them. It's not there to get people's hopes up as to when we are going to move through those stages.
Yeah, sadly, Ewan, we don't live in a perfect world where we know the infection rate is going to be X in 3 weeks' time and therefore we can move on to a certain level. We have to react accordingly. We've put out the basic information on what we will do, but obviously until we know the data in the UK and where it's going and our own data, then we can't give dates. And I know it's frustrating to people not to have a clear timetable. We just have a framework of what will happen when the situation improves. Right, your last question, Ewan.
Yeah, just on the 3A stage that you've announced today, you mentioned the risk of the volume of the extra people that may be coming to the island under that stage. Do you have an idea of how many people you expect would apply to come back?
No, we haven't been able to factor in that in that equation. Obviously, I think there will be a significant number at the start, in the possibly a couple of hundred a week. But whether that would tail off going forward, do we do it before Christmas? All this depends on, as I say, the infection rates in the UK. So we can't be certain as to how many people would want to come to the island. And also, we don't know what position the regions they're living in, whether they'd be able to come anyway. But we just have to plan and say, well, it's logical that if we are going to allow people who aren't ordinarily resident on the island and who aren't key workers, etc., that we look after our own families, our own children, our parents who are living off island first. They have to take priority, and then visitors in general. David, do you want to expand on any further?
No, I think you've covered that perfectly, Chief Minister.
Yeah. Okay, thanks very much, Ewan. And last but not least, we have Simon Richardson from Business 365. Good afternoon, Simon. Fasta mai.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. My first question on a slightly different tack. I recently returned from the UK on the Menannan, and on both journeys, the vessel was less than a quarter full. Now, the steam packet has obviously done an excellent job since March, maintaining services between the Isle of Man and the UK. But this must have come at a pretty huge cost. Do we know if government will be required to provide emergency funding for the company to make up for the losses it's incurred? And if so, how much could it be?
Well, that's not something we've factored in at the moment in time. Yes, they are obviously making a loss with the severe reduction in footfall. The freight has continued to be brought in, and I'm sure the freight will have been increasing as our construction industry has taken off now, and we're seeing a significant reduction in the unemployment rate in the construction sector. So that will obviously be helping the freight side of things. However, that's something we will have to review with the steam packet when they look at, you know, they've got a clearer picture of where they are and their financial stability. But obviously we will, if there's a need to support the steam packet, we will. And obviously other companies that the UK are in a similar position. We've seen Guernsey's airline, Aurini, before COVID, I think they lost circa £10 million in the year. And I think it's going to be substantially more than that. But our sea links are important. And if there's a clear case that because of COVID, the impact on business has impacted significantly the steam packet, then we will, of course, help, which we have done for a significant number of other businesses on the island.
Thank you. The other question now, we've heard today of Rishi Sunak's new support scheme in the UK. Are there any plans for further support for Isle of Man businesses that may be still struggling as a result of the restrictions still in place? I'm thinking possibly hospitality.
Yes, well, obviously, we've said we'll be following the VAT on the hospitality side of things. We have made decisions in the Council of Ministers today, and I think it's only fair that the department in question will be announcing support for those sectors that continue to be affected on the island as a result of COVID. Obviously, it's great to see the vast majority of our businesses back and running now, but we have to accept that there are a number of businesses, certainly in our hospitality sector, who are severely impacted, and we will be doing our utmost to help them going forward. But we will be announcing the support in the coming days on that. But thank you very much, Simon. Well, thank you for the questions. And as I've said throughout, I am committed to keeping you updated and informed with developments. We will continue to deliver these briefings regularly. We may not always have announcements to make, and it may not always be me who appears, but we will continue to communicate with you. That's all for today, and thank you again for your time. Good evening.